Hello, I'm Jamie Waxman, and you are listening to Playgirl's Sex Pod. I am Playgirl Magazine and Television's Sexplorer, and you can learn more about me and these sex pods and more about Playgirl TV at www.playgirltv.com. Or you can go to your local cable provider, especially here in the United States, and check out your video on demand section. Playgirl TV should be there. And if it's not, you should call and find out. Because while you can be orally stimulated by me, although today I can't promise that that's going to happen, if you're looking for some more visual stimulation and you're looking for something that's really couples friendly, you should definitely check out Playgirl TV. It's not only available in the United States, it's available all over the world in Turkey and Holland and Australia. Just check out PlaygirlTV.com for more information. Now, I really wanted today's show to be sexy as I am sitting here with my pussy on my desk. And actually, it's not even my pussy. It's a foster pussy. And no, I wasn't talking about that pussy. I was talking about a cute, furry, 10-year-old boy named Blue, who happens to live with me here in New York. But that's neither here nor there, because that has nothing to do with the topics for today's sex pod. And so let's get to it. Whew. Well, I said last sex pod that I was going to talk about our virginity and how important losing your virginity is or was. Does virginity matter? Because it's really interesting if you think about it. We spend so much time focused on losing our virginity and the importance of it and how special we want it to be. And do we remember what it even is like to lose our virginity? I mean, do you really remember what that special night or day or afternoon or hour, minute perhaps even, felt like while you were, you know, doing it? Or, you know, years later maybe, you know, for me now dating myself, although I'm still very young, but it's been 15 years since I lost my virginity. And it's something that I hadn't thought about in a very long time. Ironically, before it happened, I used to think about it all the time. And I remember on airplanes, I would pray that they wouldn't crash so that I didn't die a virgin. I didn't want to die with that intact, although I wasn't sure my hymen was intact. And I got an email, I will go all over the place, I decided right now, about a woman who got a hymenectomy, or I could be pronouncing it wrong, and she loved it. It was because her hymen was too thick, and so sex hurt, and so she went to her doctor, and they just did a little snip snip, and now sex is amazing. Anyway, a few weeks ago, I finally got around to renting that movie everyone had talked about for about 2 weeks, called The 40-Year-Old Virgin, and it brought back a lot of memories and questions. Before I lost it, I remember thinking that losing it would be a big deal and that I could become a whore or a slut, words that now don't bother me. In fact, words that I think people should reclaim. But at the time, I didn't want to throw it away because it was supposed to be special and beautiful and kept all tied up in a pretty pink box with a bow on top until the right guy came along to unwrap it. But really, who is the right guy when you're, you know, in your teens and sexually curious and ready to do something about it? So, you know, maybe 50 years ago when my grandmother was, you know, well, actually by that point she was my age now, which is 31. But maybe even like 70 years ago or 60 years ago when my grandmother was a teenager, I would have waited like she did for a husband. But, you know, women at that age were married by 18, 19, or 20, so it wasn't so strange to wait till your late teens. But that's not how it is really anymore. I think the average age for women to get married is 25. And if that's the case, you know, how many women are really waiting to lose their virginity? I for one, wasn't. And, you know, I was expecting the loss of it to change my life, but I know it must have changed my life, but I don't think it changed my life the way I thought it would change my life. Maybe for a few minutes afterwards, I felt like a real woman. But after that, I was back to being the same girl I had always been. Now, you know, I went online to look up what a virgin was because I realized as I'm talking about this, Maybe we all have different definitions of a virgin, and there are different definitions. And online, I found a number of those definitions, but the most common definition basically stated that a virgin is someone who has not yet had sex with a member of the opposite sex. That doesn't really help me, because then what is sex? But also, it kind of eliminates a whole portion of the population that has sex with the same sex, which is still, you know, a matter of eventually losing your virginity. And I find that that's a little bit too close-minded. Now, it's interesting, because I once felt, years before, when I too was a young virgin, when I tried to obtain information about losing my virginity, that this was before the internet of information could help me do the job. And it was really hard to find information, but it's amazing that I still can't totally agree with the information that's out there. Although I'm sure I can name some fantastic sites if you're listening and happen to have children in your life. ScarletTeen.com or SexEtc.com, otherwise it's .org, or the Advocates for Youth. These are great sites that will probably have fantastic information about sexuality and virginity. But, you know, I thought that this really left out the non-opposite sex loving members of our community. And furthermore, you know, what is sex? How can we define sex? And then how can we define virginity? And if we can't even define what virginity is, how important is losing it really in the end? And, you know, that all depends on the person, obviously. There is a woman named Laura M. Carpenter. She is the author of a study called Virginity Lost. And in it, she discusses three types of virgins. The three types look at what they've got as either a gift, a stigma, or a part of a learning process. And the gifters tend to give away their virginity step by step in stages. So maybe the first night they kiss, and then a few months later they're, you know, letting somebody up their shirt or down their pants, and eventually they give it away when they've gone through the steps. Now, you know, this makes this the gift that keeps on giving. But the bad thing about this is that once these gifters usually give it away, they've placed so much emphasis on doing it that they usually stick with a person who they've done it with, whether it's for the right reasons or the wrong ones, whether they're, you know, a good person or a bad person. Now, there are stigmatized virgins, and stigmatized virgins are so desperate to lose their virginity that they'll do it with anybody anywhere. And I guess the difference between the gifter and the stigmatized virgin is the gifter waits so long to give that gift, and the stigmatized virgin might not wait at all. And the third type of virgin is the learning process virgin. Again, this is all from Laura Carpenter's study, Virginity Lost. I am Jamie Waxman. This is Playgirl Sex Pod. Check out PlaygirlTV.com and JamieWaxman.com, JamieWaxman.com. So the third type of virgin is the learning process virgin. And these virgins tend to approach sex from an intellectual perspective. Ironically or not so ironically, they tend to be from middle class families. I have to tell you, my pussy just went on his back and it just threw me off for a second. Okay, I'm back. They are curious about sex and they want to have it, but they make more educated decisions about having sex. So it made me think about what type of virgin I was. What type of virgin were you? I'd like to know. I think I was a bit of a gifter in the sense that it took me 16 months or so to lose my virginity, but I was also a learning process virgin because I did definitely educate myself. And my partner and I at the time, my first boyfriend and I, we decided that we were going to have sex and that this was going to be something special. I don't know if we made dinner or anything that night, but I know his parents were definitely out of the house and we were definitely alone in the house. And we did have sex in his bed for the first time. I do also remember thinking afterwards, it hurt a little bit. And we went out for ice cream afterwards. That's basically what we did because I think we had to get out of the house. We didn't want his parents to know, or we thought they might know what was going on, that it wasn't all that great. And I was kind of disappointed in the whole situation. But it had nothing to do with him, I don't think, at the time. It just had to do with the fact that, like, we place so much emphasis on our virginity in this society, and we shouldn't. Okay, now, I was the first one of my friends to have sex, and I didn't really know what to expect, and I didn't want to get pregnant, so we bought some horrible, like, rocket-shaped suppositories that smelled like poison. Although I'm not exactly sure what poison smells like, I can tell you that what I smelled on September 11th, 2001, here in New York City, that did smell like poison. But I'm also imagining it to be a cross between Hair on Fire and Nair on Fire. And if you've ever smelled Nair, the hair removal cream, you'll understand what I mean. We also bought a box of condoms with the sperm-killing agent Nonoxynil 9, which now, years later, I actually tell everybody, and women especially, to never, ever use Nonoxynil 9. It may protect against, you know, it may kill sperm, but it's a detergent in your body. So what else is it killing? And not only that, to stay on the soapbox for another minute. I like to talk about my soapboxes on Playgirl Sex Pod, don't I? To stay on my soapbox for just a minute, it also has been recently proven to help irritate women's vaginal, delicate vaginal linings, and in doing so actually opens them up to risks of HIV and other STI, sexually transmitted infections. You know, it didn't change my life, like I said, losing my virginity. I didn't feel any more mature than I had the day before, except for the fact that I had actually let somebody penetrate my body, which I guess I could have done with a dildo, and we had done it with fingers before. I was no different than my virgin or non-virgin's friends. And I'm still amazed, this is what it comes back to, on how much emphasis we place on virginity here in this United States. And it's a word that vanishes as soon as two people connect genitally. And I didn't change it all that day. But after a while, I did become more aware. And I suppose this was with age and moving on eventually after 9 years of being in a relationship, very long time for a young girl. This would have happened anyway. But losing my virginity made me realize that I had so much more to learn and that this was only the beginning. You know, years later, I realized the importance of experience and experimentation, and that's what losing my virginity taught me. So, I don't know, I didn't like the movie, The 40-Year-Old Virgin. It didn't do it for me. I didn't, you know, everyone else gave this rave reviews. It wasn't working for me, but maybe it's because for however transformative losing your virginity is supposed to be, didn't change my life in the way I expected it to. Now, what still makes me very upset and sad about this whole virginity thing is that here in the United States, government funding to public schools is only issued if schools agree to teach abstinence-only education. Now, what this means, abstinence-only education, is that you are not teaching or promoting the use of condoms or other safer sex methods. You're only promoting abstinence as the 100% foolproof method to not getting pregnant or contracting an STI. And you know what? Abstinence is the only 100% foolproof method for not contracting an STI or getting pregnant. But realistically, people, folks, government, whoever is teaching this and encouraging others to teach this, think back to when you were sexually curious and naive, perhaps, and young and ready to explore. When you were in your late teens, early 20s, whenever it was, wouldn't you have wanted information on how to protect yourself as opposed to just having to figure it out blindly? I mean, that's the difference. It's not that comprehensive sexuality education promotes having sex. It promotes safer sex if you're not going to choose abstinence, which is a very realistic thing to promote. I wanted to have a whole other discussion, but I feel like at this point to go into this next discussion would be, well, you know what? I was going to say it would take this podcast for a long ride, but why not? Because I feel like right now this is very relevant and very important, and it has something to do with teenagers and adults who are having sex. Okay, here's the deal. South Dakota is looking to pass a bill that will effectively eliminate almost every single abortion in the state. Now, this is serious because this includes abortions by rape or incest. Basically, the only types of abortions that it doesn't include are abortions where the mother's life is definitely 100% in danger. At least this is what I understand. And even that, I'm not, you know, so sure will not change eventually. I'm not so sure it will not change eventually, just so that sentence now makes sense. This is really, really scary because the truth is that we are so not ready to go back-to-back alley abortions, which is what's going to happen. I need to read an excerpt for you from Christina Page's new book, How the Pro-Choice Movement Saved America. And this is a basic book's came out this year, Christina Page's How the Pro-Choice Movement Saved America. And this is startling information, so I need you to just bear with me. I'm going to try not to read word for word because I don't know if I'm allowed to, really. And we'll continue from here. This is Jamie Waxman, and you're listening to Playgirl's sex pod. Okay, are you ready? Many countries that have outlawed abortion have higher abortion rates than countries where abortion is legal. That's amazing. Did you hear that? Many countries that have outlawed abortion have higher abortion rates than countries where abortion is legal. And it's worth noting that the Catholic Church wasn't always pro-life. Until 1869, it supported legalized abortion until approximately 19 weeks of pregnancy, when it then considered the fetus to have a soul. And if abortion is outlawed, women will not seek its services less frequently. They will just survive them less often. Did you hear that? If abortion is outlawed, it's not that women won't get them. It's just that they'll die more frequently. And this has been true in the United States, as well as many countries where abortion was once illegal. Do we remember this? Abortion here was once illegal, and I'm very afraid that it will be again. Now, it's not just pro-choice women who seek abortions, and it's never just been pro-choice women. And I'm sorry for saying pro-life. I consider that an anti-choice, because I am pro-life, but I am pro-choice. Most people would be startled to learn that even today, when battle lines are drawn, 40% of women who have abortions in the United States are evangelical Christians or Catholic. I'm really having a hard time speaking today. And the majority of women in the United States, that's 61% of women in the United States having abortions, are already mothers. Okay. Whew. Now, there is a better method to abortion, and it is a medication abortion, and commonly known as RU486, it is available in more than 29 countries. For decades, millions of women worldwide have used it safely, but in the United States, this method is called Mifeprex. That's Mifeprex, because the French manufacturers of RU486 were unwilling to distribute the product in the United States for fear of anti-choice violence. So a new company had to distribute here in the U.S. Now, besides the fact that RU486 or Mifeprex is not only the safest way to end a pregnancy, it is also one of the easiest, because you can end a pregnancy as early as 4 weeks after a woman's last menstrual cycle. With an abortion, you must wait at least 7 weeks, which actually also means that usually she's about 2 weeks pregnant. And this also means that you are being both safer for the fetus, which is about the size of a letter, capital T, on a typewriter or a computer. If you go type a T, that's the size of the fetus at 4 weeks, or technically 2 weeks, because 4 weeks is 2 weeks after it's probably started to really sink in there. And anyway, okay, so that's part of it. And 7 weeks is obviously a little bit bigger, but also as you let a pregnancy continue, the less safe, the more dangerous it is to have an abortion. Now, a sad footnote to the pro-life movement's success in keeping Mifeprex out of the U.S. for years is that U.S. doctors were prevented from studying its other potential uses, like treating many of the most fatal forms of cancer. And that includes ovarian cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer. There are tons of potential benefits of using RU486, brain tumors, uterine fibroids, and even bipolar depression. So we're not only trying to take away a woman's right to choose to have an abortion, a woman's right, my body, my rights. You see, I get totally worked up about this. But also, we're possibly preventing other, you know, important breakthroughs in science. And okay. After all, the facts suggest that this early abortion method is extremely safe. Of more than the 350,000 American women who have used this drug since 2000, less than 1% have had a complication. The likelihood of death resulting from a medication abortion is 0.00085% or less than 1 in 100,000. Compare this to the risk of dying during childbirth, which is 1 in 2,500. Abortion is one of the safest medical procedures performed in the United States, with less than 1% risk of major complication. Though, as the anti-choice movement well knows, risks do escalate later in pregnancy. Now, again, it goes back to the whole promoting abstinence thing, the startling statistics about abortion, and really, it's amazing, because I failed to mention one other thing. And okay, by the end of Bush's term as governor in 2000, Texas ranked dead last in the nation, 50th out of 50, in the decline of teen birth rates, 15 to 17-year-old and 15 to 17-year-old females. Now, that's, you know, we're not doing something right here. There's something, we are, you know, we are among the highest we have among the highest abortion rates along with Brazil, Chile, and Peru, yes, they're doing, which are, you know, predominantly, their predominant religion is Catholicism. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Catholicism, but I'm just saying we need to really rethink what we talk about and do about abortion and safe sex. Okay, and here's one other startling statistic that I wanted to share from Christina Page's new book, How the Pro-Choice Movement Saved America. The United States ranks number one for teen moms, far outpacing the rest of the industrial... The United States ranks number one for teen moms, far outpacing the rest of the industrialized world, four times the European Union average and 60% higher than the rate in the United Kingdom, which came in second. In the 28 countries under review, there were 760,000 births to teenagers, two-thirds of which occurred in the United States. The United States is so bad in preventing teen pregnancy that it is the only rich nation smack in the middle of the third world bloc for teen births, ranking just behind Thailand and directly before Rwanda. This really leaves some food for thought. And, you know, I can't even talk about this much more because it just riles me up if you haven't heard. I'm Jamie Waxman. This is Playgirl Sex Pod here on PlaygirlTV.com. And whew, it just gets me so upset. Here in the United States, we really need to rethink our abstinence-only education and our ideas about abortion. And in South Dakota, I hope it's not too late to rethink this. Please, people, do what you can to become, I hate the word activist, but do what you can to make a difference. Reese Witherspoon said it last night at the Academy Awards. Woo! She said that she just wanted to do something that matters. And that's kind of how I feel. And shouldn't that be how you feel? Let's do something that matters. And this matters. I'm Jamie Waxman. This has been Playgirl Sex Pod. I promise a happier note next week. But thank you for listening. And tune into PlaygirlTV.com. Check it out. Video on demand on your local cable providers. Or call your local cable provider to find out if you get Playgirl TV. Also, check out my site, jamiewaxman.com, jamiewaxman.com. And I'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, thanks again for listening. Come again and again and again.